That is a matter of pain and imagination. Excess seems to be the first thing that comes to mind. A fear, too, of something that is endless and insatiable. This fear could be one of the main reasons why the little pains and the little imaginations of individual bodies are so much ignored within society, which deals so much with visibility of objects. States of the inexpressive, too, seem to be forced in excessive degree, as they are not convincing otherwise. Pain and imagination therefore appear on the scene as either torture or insanity. But this in itself is the result of the failed utopia of a communal language, an utopia which pre-described language should be capable of expressing all. I remember that you gave an example of Levi-Strauss' interpretation on the creation of meaning in your Elements of Semiology. Structuralism in anthropology maintains a firm belief that it is a system of oppositions is capable of producing endless amounts of meaning, even if such meaning is construed through the opposition of something with nothing. It is Levi-Strauss' way of explaining concepts like mana and the Tao, and it works perfectly in systematic semiotic structure. However, such semiotic structures are also very much the result of a deciding group, as you have shown in your work The Fashion System, in which it also becomes quite clear that the content gains its content only through studying the form. And this form creates the sign. As functional, it ceases to be the expression of an elementary freedom of speech. This is one of the reasons why The Fashion System has been called a method book by some scientists, and therefore at times, I'm sorry to say, rather boring. Semio-analyzing society too can become a routine. Much more exciting is the zero degree in writing, as well as your approach which maintains the familiarity between the syntax of language and the combinatory freedom of speech. Both work point out the responsibility of the chosen forms of language and its creation of the object, which is a predisposition for dispersing with the utopia of a general communal language. The difference between you and Levi-Strauss, as well as the difference between utopias of a general communal language versus an individual utopia, becomes clear if we look at your work on the Marquis de Sade. As a matter of importance for Levi-Strauss, both the inexpressibility of pain as well as the madness of imagination needs to be overcome by the structure and words of the community. I'd rather doubt that you would really agree with him on that. Levi-Strauss indeed creates the other as a subject of pain and imagination, though this inexpressibility and the utopia of expressiveness in Levi-Strauss' theory naturalizes these states, which seem to lack either subject or object. For the love of it, and in spite of the admiration I feel for Levi-Strauss's work, I cannot turn my back on the feeling that his structures creep up from behind to incorporate the individual body smotheringly into the landscape of biological science. In fact, I prefer this landscape to be one of a rather floating signifiers of individual actions. The utopia of individuals is not really able to subject anybody. Your description of the writing of de Sade immediately and ironically counteracts Levi-Strauss' general fear of individual utopia. De Sade's language operators act on themselves. They are reversed onto utterance, and in which the other is not the subject or the object, but the supplement, that is. The supplement is the other. However, it is there, as neither desire nor discourse before the other and outside the other. De Sade's crude language is the utopia of his discourse, a rare, courageous utopia, not because it bears sexuality, nor even because it naturalizes it, but because it appears to believe in the possibility of a subject-less lexicon. De Sade, therefore, becomes the author of a language. He expresses sadism. but does not necessarily victimize the other through his expression. Rather, it makes sadism senseless. I remember that Levi Strauss has been so eager to establish universal taboos where incest is concerned, but he failed to see that this taboo did not entail the act of incest. The taboo has never prevented the crime to occur. Instead, the taboo entailed speaking about incest, which has ensured the crime to repeat itself over and over again. Contrary to this, the Sade's utterance of sadism that bears his name and would probably never exist as the topic for reflection within society, if not for his work, expresses both pain and imagination, thereby evocating, actualizing society's hypocrisy, which has resulted from such universal taboos. The individual utopia becomes a narration of the speech act, without the pretense of representing the other. Yet, as it seems in the case of the Sade, all others were extremely embarrassed by him. The Sade, like Ezra Pound, was imprisoned for uttering and writing, not for inflicting pain. He was an embarrassment for his family and for the regimes, both the old and the new. This must partly have been the result of his social mobility. He could leave his enclave and thereby, as you mentioned, become a social joker. The attempts to control individual bodies for fear of the uncontrollable again leads to a more horrifying suppression than any individual utterance could accomplish. It is not surprising, then, that the penitentiary administration of the Vincennes forbade the Sade to receive Rousseau's confessions, and was refused at any means of writing in the last years of his detention. Your approach towards society involves attempts to deconstruct its political domination. Here, the structure ceases to be translations from the body to the text. They are all willed against society's pretexts. It is the refusal of being incorporated by society that urged the Sade to write his imaginations, and you have tried for him, as well as for Fourier and Loyola, to dissipate or elude the moral discourse that has held on each of them, working as they themselves worked, only on languages. It is because of your point of departure that you are not a structuralist like Levi Strauss. In fact, you disconnect the author of the text from his, her genre, period, history, or class. In such an approach, the author ceases to be the residue of culture, and both his pains, his imagination, small or excessive, can be salvaged from the wrecks of a sheer, contempted, maddened mind, or the sheer, contempted, inexpressible body. And through this, the veiled spectrum of denuded, clothed, and disclosed. Such a spectrum has revealed more of the individual sensorium and left it equally unstructurable, but it has not and probably will never lead to a disbursement of doubt, that horrifying means of exclusion.